talk to private equity. Once you get enough of a sample size, you understand they're going to value on X, Y, and Z metrics. So I basically went to work for the next 2 years to get those metrics to where it looked super, super attractive.
First off, what multiple did you say you sold at a 10X multiple?
The company sold at, I think it was above 12X.
Welcome to the Action Academy Podcast.
Stand back while I celebrate freedom.
The show where we help you achieve financial independence with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps from guests who've already earned their freedom.
The flags of freedom fly.
Choose to do what you want.
What you want.
With who you want.
With who you want.
When you want.
When you want.
With another episode today. Now, here's your host, Brian Lubin.
The Action Academy family, my brothers, my sisters, how are y'all doing? This is your host, as always, Brian Lubin, coming to you live with the mindsets, methods, and actionable steps for you to earn freedom in your life and business. There are two different types of people. We've got business owners, and then we've got entrepreneurs. I'm trying to help y'all get into the second part of that equation. Now, before y'all come at me with your pitchforks, I'm a business owner too. I'm in part one. I'm transitioning to part two of the equation. I'm growing with you guys. But here, let me make the definition between the two different terms. A business owner is that person that leaves that W-2 and opens up their own thing. And they're saying, okay, cool. Now I'm an entrepreneur. I'm going to build this company. And what ends up happening is instead of them running the company runs them. They are the marketing, they are the sales, they are the customer support, they are everything in the business to where if you decided one day to stop working, the lights would shut off in the building within 2 weeks. A seasoned entrepreneur is the person that begins that same business, but instead of thinking, how can I do all of this? They think about what systems can I put in place to make this very attractive and automated? How can I automate this task? How can I systematize this? How can I hire for this? And what they do is they build this giant, beautiful package that is an ecosystem that is not reliant on one singular person. Does that make sense? Great, because if it doesn't, then today's episode is going to help further drive this point home. So before I introduce today's guest, I have to provide a bit of context for some people that may not understand some of the terms we discuss. If you're a business owner or an entrepreneur listening to this, you won't understand everything we're talking about. If you do not yet own a business, I will explain some of the terms that we're going to discuss. There are two terms. The first is multiple. So when you sell a stock or a piece of real estate, you're going to sell that for the price of whatever the market states that the asset is worth, right? If the stock is worth $100 and you have 10 shares, you can sell that for $1,000 in your pocket. Make sense? Cool. For businesses, they aren't valued like that. They are valued at multiples of revenue. So the more attractive a business is and the more systematized and packaged it is, then it will sell for a higher multiple. So whereas you sell that stock for $100. If you have a business that's producing $100,000 net, then you can sell that for a 5 to 10x multiple. So you get $500,000 or $1 million for that business. The second term is how a lot of businesses are valued, and that's called EBITDA, which is an acronym for earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. That's how they calculate how purely profitable a business is. Cool. So now that we're done with Entrepreneurship 101, I would like to introduce you to today's guest, Amit Goglani. Amit built a hyper-profitable physical therapy chain with hundreds of locations across the country and was able to successfully package and sell this off to private equity for a 12x multiple. So the cash payout that this guy got was astronomical. The first half of the interview is talking about how Amit packaged and positioned his company to sell for the highest multiple possible. In the back half of the interview is talking about some of the emotional repercussions and identity shifts that he had to go through after exiting the company. Lastly, you guys need to stick around for the final 10-15 minutes of the interview because Amit talks about what he's got going on with his new company that he's partnered with, Accountable Equity. They are partnering in golf courses and resorts, and he's got an investment opportunity for you guys. So I apologize for the longer than normal intro, but we had to provide a bit of context for some people listening to this. Without any further ado, let's get to it. All right. Amit Goglani, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. Brian freaking Lubin, international man of mystery. This is a treat for me to be talking to you.
Man, vice versa. I'm so excited to talk to you today and you and the ghost of Josh McAllen here. This is going to be fantastic because I've been following what you guys have been doing for quite a while. And I've been following your story for quite a while because I was sitting next to you as you were going through a freaking existential crisis. And I really want to lead this interview off with that specific moment because that story that you were telling when we were sitting at this table at a GoBundance event and you are having this really deep heart-to-heart conversation about a problem that is not an up and down the street kind of problem. And I tell people when they're talking to me and they're asking me questions about GoBundance, I say, you join the group as soon as you get to a point in your life and business where you have questions that are un-Googleable. And you had a question that you cannot Google. So I'd like to invite you to start with what the heck was your problem and what transpired from that?
Yeah. It's funny because nobody's going to be crying for me for these types of problems. And that's the thing. You read about people who have like these issues.
You're with your people. You're fine.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah. So I am a physical therapist and I started a company about 20 years ago and I built the company up to a point where it was very attractive to a lot of people. So I was getting offers sent to me and I had to choose at that time in my life what I wanted to do. Do I want to keep the race going or do I want to sell it? Now, honestly, any good business owner looking at their metrics is looking at what's going on from an outside point of view and what's happening. For me, I wanted to 10X myself. So I took the option of selling it to a private equity company that was coming in that was really hungry and that wanted to really expand. So I was one of the founding people. Or I was one of the original people. From that point, we went national. So we had over 100 clinics all over the country and I was part owner. And then from there, another private equity came along after we built it up even more and they bought me out. So yes, everything that I had worked for and what I was trying to achieve happened. But guess what? That's bittersweet because as a business owner, your passion and your drive is building, right? You're building a company and every day you wake up in the morning, you're going on the treadmill, you're working out, you're thinking about building the company, you're working like at such a passionate level and that's your focus. But once you achieve your goal, what people don't understand is what's next. Yeah, you tell yourself, I'm going to relax, I'm going to golf. But after 2 weeks, you're like, this vacation's over. I need something to do. And that's what my crisis was. What do I do? What drives me now? What is my passion now? I could do what I want to do, but what do I want to do? Yeah, what is that? Is what I had to sit down and figure out and spend time. And people will tell you, don't rush. Don't rush. Take your time. So that is the question that I asked everybody. I was like, look, I have the situation. I got everything I wanted. Now what?
Yeah.
Yes.
Have you heard the concepts of navigation versus acceleration?
No.
It's really good. And it's exactly what you went through. And I believe that you're entering another period of acceleration in your life right now. But the quote is from this guy named Vishen. He wrote a book called The Buddha and the Badass. And in this, he talks about navigation versus acceleration and how it's a yin and yang to business and how you need to have periods where you are running full throttle. And you're going 100 miles an hour and you're sprinting like a cheetah. And that was you growing this thing that was your child and growing this thing into a national brand and all these hundreds of locations. That was your sprint. But then once you finish sprinting, then there comes a point where you can't just continue to sprint. That was the acceleration. And now you need to go to a period and season of navigation. So then you relax and you take the time to set the GPS for whatever is next. And then that's when you do the internal work. And that's where the next period of acceleration is born, is from the stillness of the navigation.
Building that company, I was never afraid of working hard, but it got to a point that you say, you know what? I want to actually start working smart, not just hard. You can combine working hard with working smart. I think you got to get a KO option there. And I was really charging hard and working hard, getting up early, staying up late. And then I said, okay, the smart move would be to sell the private equity and to really multiply myself significantly. Now I'm at a point where I want to try to just make smart moves all the time.
Sure.
And I don't mind once the move is smart to work hard in it, because just by design, that's what I will automatically gravitate towards.
I love that. I want to dissect the exit for a little bit in a couple of different areas before we move on to the rest of the story. First off, what multiple did you say you sold at a 10X multiple?
The company sold at, I think it was above 12X.
Whew.
So when you originally get started, it's based off your current EBITDA, which now the current EBITDA is going to be based off I had four clinics, right? then you sell that. But then the whole point is you add other clinics on through the country. And then when you build up, now your EBITDA is significantly bigger. So your multiple gets significantly higher. And then there's different things that you can add in there as value adds. Look, we're a national company. We can service this many clients across this many states. We can do X, Y, and Z and things like that. So from that standpoint, another private equity or another buyer. So there's two different buyers. There's strategic, which are existing companies, physical therapy companies that want to buy you in and fold you into their existing map. And then there's private equity. They want to come in and they want to see where you're at and they want to multiply it significantly. So it really depends on what your options are or what you are looking for. We found a private equity that was eager to get into our space. And so they were fighting for us to take them on. So therefore, we were able to command a higher multiple going that exit.
Do you pursue or do you attract?
Attract. We had multiple people bidding over us.
Okay. I love that. So that leads perfectly into my next question. So a lot of people on here are either entrepreneurs or they're baby entrepreneurs, myself included. I've got the little diaper on in my entrepreneurial journey here.
I noticed and, that.
Yeah. Sorry. You can smell it through the camera. But people are, especially in GoBundance as well, people are making gobs of revenue. Their revenue is good. Their net revenue is good. Their EBITDA is starting to look a little bit more attractive. What are some of the levers that you pull to package this and plate this on a dish really well for private equity to be attracted to it? Because I remember Cody Sanchez having a seminar where she came to one of our events in Breckenridge and she said, begin with the end in mind. When I start a business, I think about how I'm going to go ahead and exit it at the beginning. So what is some advice you can give to people to package their business to be something that's a sellable product?
Okay, so in my industry, when I knew that I was thinking about selling 2 years prior to the actual sale, I started entertaining what other companies, how they valued my company. Like, what do they use to value my company? So I started talking to different companies. I talked to physical therapy companies that wanted to buy me out. I talked to private equity. Once you get enough of a sample size, you understand, well, this is how they're going to value you. They're going to value on X, Y, and Z metrics. So I basically went to work for the next 2 years to get those metrics to where it looked super, super attractive to that point. And then I said, okay, now let me entertain talking to people.
So is it normally just some type of flavor of recurring revenue?
It's multiple things. Are you in a geographic location that is attractive to either private equity or strategics? Like, they can't enter the area because you're a commanding force in that area. How many referral sources do you have? And then the other thing they want to know is, how integral are you in the business? Now, by that point, I was the acting CEO. I wasn't treating patients all the time. That was more favorable to them because what they don't want is me being the head chef and being the one that's treating all the patients. And then they know it's all on my back as opposed to me being external to it. And I can basically help manage multiple clinics without having to be there actually treating the patients. So they found that to be attractive. Now, depends on who you're trying to go for. A strategic might want you in there actually treating patients all the time, which is why I didn't actually choose that option because I wanted to be a big fish in a small pond as opposed to being the small fish in the big pond. That was just something that aligned with me because for the past, I don't know, years, I was getting trained to be a CEO of a company. I did not want to use that to treat patients all day long. Not that there's anything wrong with it. It just didn't feel like that was the perfect fit for me. I could always hire a therapist and train them to be the best that they could be. But I thought I was better at the leadership and the CEO role and getting others to row in the same boat or row in the same direction.
Yeah, I was listening to an interview with Alex and Layla Hormozi. So they're taking over the world right now. And their specialty is that $3 million company. They partner with them through acquisition.com and then they take them to $30 million. That's their thing. And one of the strategies they use is taking whatever the current CEO is and replacing them with a team of 6 to 10. What they do is they remove them and then they say that that's the first thing that they think about to increase the valuation because they replace the person with a system.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, interesting.
I got to that point just honestly because a patient of mine, years before I even opened my private practice, gave me two books. One of them was Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and the other one was E-Myth by Michael Gerber. And if you know anything about E-Myth, it's about systematizing. So I was all about systematizing my practice. So it was not just me. I had a marketing department, I had a billing department, I had different departments that handled different things. And some things we outsourced as well. So that just made us look more attractive because we had, when you look at our referral sources, it wasn't just all my patients are coming from one physician. That makes it unattractive also, because God forbid that one physician moves, then your whole practice collapses. But when you're well diversified and you're constantly trying to add more and diversify more, it makes you more attractive. So you're able to increase your negotiating from that point too.
What do most companies do wrong when they are building and they have some semblance of success on paper, but they aren't attracting these buyers at the end? Because for companies, like some people just think about, oh, I'm going to start this company and I'm just going to do this, do the whole entrepreneur thing. And others that are more seasoned are saying, hey, I'm going to go create this thing. I'm going to sell it at 7 to 10x multiple. I'm going to have a giant influx of cash to where I can deploy that. And now I could play a game of leverage and play smart games, like you're saying.
Yeah.
What do people get wrong with this?
So I think, like you said earlier, they don't think with the end in mind. Okay. So if they're thinking with the end in mind, they're building a business. They're not just building a mom and pop shop business in the sense that they are integral in every single part of the business. They are the marketing person. They are the one behind the desk. They're doing everything, right? They do that initially to try to save on costs so they can have a higher income. But what they're not doing is building systems. They literally don't build systems in it, and they don't look at it from a point of view as, what does a purchaser want? Like somebody who's looking to buy this, how would they view this? Now, me personally, I would look at what they're creating and say that puts a lot of risk. They are so integral for the business. If they sell and I give them money and they turn out to be a bad partner to me, then I'm screwed because they're so integral. So I'm not going to give them that high of a value. Now, if they're removed from it and they have systems in place, that value significantly increases. So I don't think that they look at it from that point of view. I know it can tell you in physical therapy, there's a lot of mom and pop owner operators. So they're owners and they're operators in their physical therapy business, and they can only achieve a certain multiple because an outside person is only going to give them so much money because that's how they built their company. They're so integral that if I'm buying them over, I need them to continue seeing patients because that's what drives the business. They have not removed themselves from the business.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. I'm curious, as I'm starting to pivot into your transition period here, I'm listening to a lot of Alex Hormozi. If you guys do not know him, you need to go check him out. The guy knows what he's talking about. So he sold his companies for a tune of like 30 to 50 million, and he got that influx of cash. But he said that now that he has the cash and he has the capital sitting in his bank account, but he doesn't have the monthly cash flow, he actually feels poorer. Like he doesn't feel as secure. So I'm curious about your perspective.
I 100% agree. It is a weird phenomenon because in your mind, you're used to a steady cash flow coming in. Now you have all this money in the bank, but your mind tells you, okay, I'm not supposed to touch that money. That money is supposed to sit there and I'm supposed to use it later in life, but I'm supposed to use the cash flow. But guess what? There's no cash flow right now until you're actually taking that capital and you're deploying it in other things, in, let's say, passive income or real estate to get passive income. You don't feel like you want to touch that principal because it's a mind game, right? You don't want that principal to crease. Yes, I completely 100% understand that. Yeah.
So let's transition as we'll do this interview in like a chapter one and a chapter two. Sure. Chapter one, we'll talk about this whole transition period. Chapter two, we'll talk about what you're doing now and what we're looking towards in the future. Yeah. But to put a pin into the first chapter, walk us through the identity shift between when you exited. This is your entire identity, because that's what we were talking about at the table, is like, who am I? What do I enjoy doing? So that was months ago. So I'm curious about your journey going through. Hey guys, what's up? It's Brian. I need your help. Just one second and the show's going to continue. But here's what I need. There are two ways that people find new podcasts to listen to. One is through word of mouth and the other is through ratings and reviews. My one ask of you guys is if you are finding value in this episode today, right now, please go and leave us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Subscribe if you haven't already, and send this episode to one or two people that you think would get value from it. Thanks in advance, and let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, the actual event that happened, the sale happened in December of last year, and I knew that it was coming up and happening. And I thought, honestly, I'd be prepared for it, that I have all these other hobbies that I would do and do this and do that. But when it came to it afterwards, it plays with your mind, because the first 2 weeks you feel elated. You feel like so proud of yourself. You achieved what you've been trying to achieve. But then after that, you're like, okay, what do I fill my days with? Before, my days were filled with a certain purpose. So really what started for me is actually asking my other GoBundance members, saying, what did you do? Like, how did you find purpose? And then people gave me the idea, look, write down what you enjoy doing. Write down the things that make you like happy to do. And we're not talking going vacationing. What are the things that drive you, that make you passionate, that really you enjoy? So I really started writing it down. And then also on the other end, write down what you don't like doing at all and that you don't ever want to do again, that you don't, it's just not as enjoyable. So once I got an idea of what I like to do, what I don't like to do, I got a kind of a semblance of something that I was like, okay, I'm on the right track, but I don't want to rush into anything. So I took my time just trying to figure it out, entertaining different conversations with different people. So it was a mindset shift to get me to the point of knowing just what I like to do. It didn't get me to a point where, okay, this is what I'm doing and I'm jumping in. It was like, okay, this is what I enjoy doing. That's the biggest takeaway I could say.
What were some items on the list of the things that you really liked doing? And what were some items on the list of things that you hated?
Okay. So what I really enjoyed doing was investing in real estate deals, okay? Because I just found real estate to be just very interesting. And just from all the history of owning real estate from wealthy families and understanding like how that can be passed on generation by generation. And I always wanted to participate in real estate, even when I owned my physical therapy company, but I would participate by owning syndicated deals, by investing in syndicated deals. Why? Because I had the mental idea that if I owned a building, I'm going to get a bunch of people calling me saying, fix my toilet, which did not seem very attractive at the time. So I participated in a lot of syndicated deals. But what would happen is because I have a lot of friends that are in healthcare, they started approaching me and they said, oh, we see what you're doing. Can we join? Before I knew it, I had about 67 accredited investors following my investments and what I was doing. So I was able to take all of their funds and my funds and approach syndicators and say, I would negotiate with them. And I would negotiate higher pref rates, better terms, better positions on the waterfall, just better rates. And being able to do that again and again attracted the attention of a bunch of different people. So I really enjoyed doing that. I really enjoyed crafting deals. I really enjoyed putting together deals that kind of made sense for me to capitalize on those things. So that was one thing that I really enjoyed. I really enjoyed, for whatever reason, I just enjoyed finance stuff. I liked finance. To me, it was very creative. And the things that it was a puzzle that if you can figure out the parts and you're putting these deals together, it felt good because I felt like I was helping other people. I was helping these other investors at the same time helping myself. So it could fit into a lot of different things. Look, us people who are in healthcare, we want to help people generally. You get into healthcare because you like helping people and you enjoy that. So it translates over to other things all the time. Things I didn't enjoy, believe it or not, as good and as easy as it was, patient treatment, that became so easy for me to help patients, but I felt like I could do more. And it's not that I didn't enjoy it. I really didn't enjoy the paperwork, to be honest with you. All the insurance paperwork that you have to do, that was just like mind-numbing, and I really didn't like to do it. I really didn't look forward to doing paperwork. I like treating patients. I like helping them, but I felt like I could do more with my capabilities. So that was something I said, I don't want to go down that same road again.
That's very interesting. I like that you got that advice, and that just speaks to the testament of the group, because it's an area where you can celebrate your wins without feeling like an asshole. And you can also share your losses and share struggles that you can't really share with other people, because that's a difficult, because I know what position you're in, because I was finishing up my month in Greece in July, and I got hit with a pretty nasty bout of depression because I was now accomplishing something that I'd worked on for 3 years. Yeah. I've worked on this goal of being here and doing this, and this is my entire identity. And then all of a sudden I got a wave where somebody called me, and I think it was Faircloth, and him and I were talking, and he was like, yeah, you need to start something about traveling and do something specifically with that. And then I replied, I was like, what happens when I'm not traveling anymore? What happens if I'm back home in Atlanta? And then I had this whole existential crisis, because then I was like, okay, when I stop this, like, who am I?
Right.
And that's not something that you can really post on Facebook.
So you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yes.
Yeah.
And so yes, I can't go to my neighbor and say, oh, yes, I sold my company for
trouble
millions,
in paradise.
Yeah. Millions of dollars. And then that's where the conversation ends right there. They're like, yeah, I feel bad for you, buddy.
Yeah.
Nobody feels bad for the guy who walked away with a bunch of money and doesn't know what to do with their time. Like, you can't have that conversation.
Yeah, Facebook post, trouble in paradise. Hey yeah. guys, I'm feeling a little down here in Mykonos. Can anybody yeah. offer some emotional support? Nah, they would punch me in the freaking throat. But nah, this is why I enjoy the group so much, because we can be able to have these conversations. That's why I like this podcast too, because it's my podcast and I control what I talk about. And so yeah. all of you get to listen to us have existential crises. It's so much fun.
It's a good learning opportunity for everybody. Those who listen, those who speak, everybody.
Nobody talks about this stuff on shows. Yeah. It's just they go on and they talk about cash flow, NOI, talk about flipping houses. Nobody talks about what happens when you build a house flipping company to this massive EBITDA. You exit it, systematize it, and now you have nothing to do anymore and you have no sense of purpose or belonging. And you're like, okay, yeah. who am I? So let's get on to chapter two. That's a great segue point. So you sat there, you got still, you made your list of things that you love doing, you made your list of things you hated doing. What happens next? And then bring us into the world that you're in today.
Yeah, so I knew that I liked doing things in finance. I knew that I liked doing investments. I knew I liked the real estate realm. And then I just started looking at what I was doing. While I was doing that, I kept getting phone calls and text messages from my friend Josh McCallum of Accountable Equity, which who's also a GoBundance guy, who actually brought me into GoBundance. He actually was very inspirational in a lot of these things. And he said, look, you're done with your company. You're great at bringing investors in. You're great at rallying investors to show them the purpose of a good investment. You keep bringing us tons of people, tons of money. Why don't you join us? And I said, I got to consider that. Then he would follow up again and say, why don't you join us? He's like, look, you're good at what you do. I am growing. Accountable Equity is growing into this boutique private equity company where we just have so many opportunities. I can't do this on my own. I need to form a great team. And what better person or what better story is an investor who's been investing for years with us now is going to be joining us and looking out for the other investors. So that is a great story. That is something that I like to do. Plus, I've been bringing money there. I've been putting my money there. And I enjoy what you do. I enjoy the community of investors that you're putting together. I enjoy the Learn and Grow events that you have on these beautiful resort properties. And I just love everything you're doing. I would definitely want to consider this. Here I am. I'm part of it now. I opened my own company. So I have my own consulting company. And the largest client is Accountable Equity, because I'm still an entrepreneur at heart. So I still love that entrepreneurship. But I really want to help Accountable Equity grow. And my title is Head of Growth. So that's what my job is, to help them grow. Yeah, we have some awesome things out there that we're doing. So it's exciting.
I love this. And I want to get into the investment thesis of Accountable Equity, because I know a bit of it. I've dipped my toe in the water, but I really want to dive in the deep end here in a second. But first, I want to use you as a case study, a bit of a non-traditional one. So I'll summarize your situation for people that are listening. A lot of people ask about how to get involved with private equity, how to get involved with syndications. And from hearing Amit's story, a good piece of advice that I would give to everyone is step one, do a mad dash to accreditation, right? So like everyone, I feel like needs to be able to get to that point where you can be an LP in deals. Yeah. Because you were investing with them as a limited partner.
Correct.
You were giving them money first. And that's what began the relationship.
That's right.
So people ask, how do I get on these teams with these GPs and multifamily and private equity? Be a limited partner first. Dip your toe in that side of it so you can see behind the curtain from that side, from the consumer and the customer side. And then you can make that pivot over and build those relationships. So is there anything exactly else right. you would echo?
No, that's exactly right. Like when I had my physical therapy company, I was an LP investor, not only with Josh's Accountable Equity, but with multifamily deals, with self-storage deals, with a lot of different deals that I was into. It's just the really like what Josh was doing personally. And I would invest again and again, just because there was more of a sense of purpose, more of a sense of community, but you hit the nail on the head. I had to be an accredited investor to invest in these things. So had I not been, I would have never been open to these opportunities. You can't just come out of the gate and say, I want to be a GP in something. Like you add value. You can't. You have no value right at that point. I first needed to understand how these investments work. And I was an LP investor and I was happy as an LP investor. But once you get your mind around it, then you can see how you can add value and then more opportunities just literally come to you. So I was an LP investor in many things, not just Accountable Equity. And then as I saw different deal structures, as I saw different deals, I became more and more aware of what's going on. So you hit the nail on the head when you said that. Start off as an LP, get your feet wet, see what it's about, and then have meaningful conversations.
We're getting to a point now on this show. You will be up in the 90s of the number of the episodes. So we have a lot of episodes, but a number of the interviews, and you're going to be probably 93 and number 94 for the interviews that go live on this show. And I thought about it and I had a moment of accomplishment and pride because I realized that now if I don't do anything at all after about a month, I'm going to have 100 hours of live in-depth conversations with multi 7 to 10 figure entrepreneurs live sitting here in this database on this podcast that anybody that wants to get accredited, like they can literally listen to 100 hours.
You're providing free education.
It's insane. And I was just like, that is so freaking cool. Cause all I think about is next one, next one, next one. And I went and started looking
back. Piece of advice. And I should take the same advice. Enjoy the things and celebrate those victories, because I was so hard charging that I would get a victory and I'd be on to, okay, what's next? What's next? Oh, let me buy myself a nice car. I got the car, but what's next? Well, let me do this. Okay, I got this. Now what's next? It's to spend a little bit of time just appreciating what you've done. And you've done quite a lot. So that's awesome.
It's been really cool. Yeah. I got that advice from Tim Rode to really just enjoy the journey. So I'm very process oriented. So I'd get my wins from the actions. So every day I've got like a daily scorecard where I'm like, okay, did I do what I was supposed to do today to drive the ball down the field? And if I did, then that's a win and I celebrate. And we this all whole know trip that is it's a celebration.
We all know that it's the consistency, right? It's a consistency of day in and day out doing the right things. But you always have these goals that you're trying to hit, but the consistency is what actually gets you there. It's like you said, moving that ball forward, which is
very,
awesome.
Very unsexy process.
Yeah.
Sexy outcome, very unsexy process. Everyone wants the 8-pack. Nobody talks about the thousands of crunches and the chicken and rice that you eat. So what separates, so out of all these people that you're investing with, all these companies that you're investing with, what separated Accountable Equities? And talk about the investing thesis here, because I know about the winery a bit. I'm not quite sure the business model and the revenue models of a winery. Maybe I could do a whole separate show on that.
Sure. I'll give you the 10,000 foot overview. Accountable Equity has multiple properties. Okay. They are drive-to destination resorts. Okay. So what does that mean? On these properties, we have large venues that we can do. We do 6 to 13 weddings every weekend. We do outdoor events, outdoor concerts. Every weekend. That's at our signature property, Renault, which is in South Jersey, which is outside of Atlantic City. Okay. That property also has a winery, has a golf course, has a hotel, and has multiple restaurants in it. So multiple sources of revenue are coming in. Okay. So these are all levers that we can pull on. Now, to compare, those of you who like invest in multifamily like me, your main source of income is the tenant rents from you. They're locked in for a year. Yes, you can do a value add by going in there, redoing the kitchen, adding a washer dryer, but then you're locked in with that fee for that rest of the year. And that's how you increase your NOI. With resorts, there's no such thing as a lock-in. We can adjust the prices daily of the actual hotel rooms. We can adjust the prices for memberships for golf courses. We can adjust the prices for wine clubs. Like, we have flexibility and nimbleness in the business, which allows itself to generate tremendous amounts of cash. Okay. So the opportunity for our LP investors when they came in these equity class investments was to invest money to get a certain pref rate, you get a refinance, and then you get your money back. But here's the really interesting thing. Josh put together that something that I have not seen in any of the investments, and I've done a lot of investing before. He gives you perpetual ownership. Okay. Now, infinite return. So you'd be like, what does that mean? Okay. You invested, I don't know, name a number. Let's use an easy number, like $100,000. You get a certain pref rate for that. Okay. Everybody's familiar with pref rates. You're getting your pref rates until you refinance. When you get your refinance, you get your money out, you get your pref rates all paid up. And that time, that usually you're out of the deal when it comes to other deals, that you've gotten what you've been promised and you're out of the deal. In this situation, you've gotten all your money back. You have no skin in the game, but he keeps you as an owner for the rest of your life. So you keep getting distributions at a certain percentage ownership level based on how much money you've put in. And that never stops. So for the rest of your life, you're going to keep getting distributions. And you're like, wait a second, but I got no money in it. That's the exact point. That's what I said. I'm telling you, I've never seen anything like this before that he's been doing. And why does he do it? The one reason why, because we are putting together a sense of community for investors. We want to create that sense of community, because unlike multifamilies, these type of resorts are actually emotional. People say, don't emotionally invest. Well, guess what? These are very emotional investments. We got weddings going on. We have outdoor concerts. We have people celebrating. We want people to feel a sense of community. So when they come to these resorts, you know what they say? Come to my golf course. Come to my resort. We want people to say that. We want people to feel that. And the people at the resorts, when they open the door for you, they don't know who you are. They're going to say, welcome home. That's how you feel when you go there. And honestly, anybody that goes there will say, I get why people invest here. I get it. This is such an emotional feeling. Like you go there and you're like, wow. Like in the wintertime, they have these outdoor events that are a French marketplace, ice skating rink, outdoor concerts, fire pits, people drinking, having a great time. You're like, you want to be a part of these type of things. So that's the equity side of the investments that people, it really attracts people to. And that's in Renault in outside of Florida, outside of New Jersey, or outside of in South Jersey, outside of Atlantic City. We have another one, Kent Manor, which is in Maryland. And we just bought another one, which is 20 minutes away from Renault, which is LBI National, which is another golf course that we took, and they have wedding venues there that they can do. These are very interesting things.
We need to do a whole, I want to do a whole separate episode about the economics of resorts and golf courses.
Oh, absolutely. I fell in love with it. That's why I keep bringing other investors and myself, and I keep investing every new property, because these are things that I haven't seen before, to be honest with you. And the opportunity that Josh gave me was even more outstanding. He said, Amit, you've invested in a lot of deals. You take a look at a lot of different things. I want you to create your own fund. And I said, my own fund? He's from an investor standpoint, put all the things that you would want to see in a fund, and we want to launch it for other investors. Do reverse engineer the math and let's figure out how to make it work. So I said, okay, let me survey a bunch of different investors to find out if what I want is what they want too. And we were able to put together something, and we just launched it 2 weeks ago, and it's called the CDF, Collateralized Debt Fund. But it puts them like they're a bank, okay? So they get the opportunity to get high yield, anywhere from 6 to 10% monthly distribution, which is like mailbox money. Literally, you can use the money to pay bills, and they have liquidity. That's the unique thing. Think about it. In every investment that you do in multifamily or anything else, you don't have liquidity. You can't say, okay, well, I want to take out this much money because I need it. No, you're locked in. With this one, you're not locked in. You can actually pull money out and you're still getting high yield. So it was really the perfecta, like everything that we wanted in it, and we got to put together. So I'm super happy about it.
Is there a chunk? So I'm assuming there's a chunk of equity that's carved out of the company to distribute to investors. Is there like a cap to that? Is there going to be a point where you have too many investors to where you can't keep doing that pref option of the owner?
No, we have so many deals that we constantly are in and opportunities that we have. And on the same properties, like we have problems on the property, but the problem is a good problem. Like at our Renault property, we don't have enough hotel space. We can always use more money to build more hotel space. We are so booked with venues for the next 2 years, we don't have any more space to put venues. But guess what? We're booked out of hotels. We're sending people to other hotels because we can't take the capacity. So we can always use additional funds. And some of these funds are already closed out. Like Renault, like that was part of our capital CH1 and 2. It's closed out. Like we don't need any more funds. We are generating enough money that we can actually fulfill a lot of these things.
So are you guys closed? So are you guys closed out across the entire portfolio right now?
No, the one that we have left is CH4, which is our LBI National, because we just opened it a little while ago. Okay. But that one is going to be closing out soon, I would think very soon. So yeah, depending on when the listeners listen to this, if they have an interest, they should get in touch with us literally right away. That is the perpetual equity model too. Then we have a couple other things that are open, including the CDF. So just exciting stuff going on.
I'm sick to my stomach, man. Sick to my stomach at how much freaking money I make, everybody. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, you're a horrible guy, Brian.
It's ridiculous. I am upset. I am nauseous, man. Because I come on here and I present these freaking opportunities to these people. Like, what the hell? This is so cool. This is so
interesting. It's really interesting because people are familiar with other investments, but they're not familiar with wedding venues that have a golf course, that have like wineries, that have all these different levers that we're able to pull. And we're producing tremendous amounts of cash and our investors are happy. And we're creating an investor community that really, really likes what we're doing and putting together. So it's very good for me to be super proud to be a part of that, because at the end of the day, I'm an investor there too.
All right. So I'm going to have to give you guys the GoBundance special once again, just like I did with Adam Jason. I've got to do a repeat. First, I presented a Colombian coffee company. And now if that's a little too south of the border for you guys, if that's a little too tropical, we can just go northeastern United States. And if you don't feel like, if you don't feel like investing in coffee, we can invest in golf. So where can people reach out to you to get information, to do their own due diligence? Because I need to say, I'm not a financial advisor. Nothing I say is professional advice. Invest at your own risk. Nothing is guaranteed. And all of the information that you can get financially is going to be through Amit and dedicated sources. Bam. Disclaimer. I work with lawyers. Go ahead.
Nice. You must memorize that one. That was good. They can find us at accountableequity.com. which I'm sure you'll put in the show notes so they can look us up there. They can they'll do their independent research there. They can go on our website. They can see the offerings and things like that. They can reach me, which would be a good idea because I can help dissect some of the things that might be right for them as opposed to what may not be right, because we have a couple different offerings. One of them is the equity class, which is for perpetual income. Then we have something called the EIF, which is specifically for tax mitigation for those people who are trying to decrease their tax position. And then we have the CDF, which is a bank account, but high yield, and it allows them to be the bank in a very good secured position. They can reach me at agaglani@accountableequity.com. I'm sure he'll put the info in the show notes so you can spell it correctly and, and connect with me, and I can talk to you and fill you guys in. But yeah, it's awesome stuff going on.
All right, guys, plain and simple, listen to the Action Academy podcast, make lots of money. Plain and simple. Here we go. Boom. I love it, man. I appreciate this. This has been a wealth of information from multiple angles. Thank you for bringing me in your world and bringing us in your world about the exit and about the different trials and turmoil that goes through that. And then we went into that. I'll tell you what, let's go ahead. If it's okay with you, I'm very interested in the economics of golf. I'm very interested about how golf courses run. So let's set up another time, do a little mini interview, like 15, 20 minutes, and talk about just the economics of golf. I mean, like how like you can run a golf course, because that's so interesting.
We should probably go into the golf as well as the winery and the resorts in general, the overview, because it is very phenomenal, all the different levers that go in on. People have no idea. They just know how to entertain themselves and enjoy themselves, but it's very interesting behind the scenes stuff.
Okay. You guys heard it here first. We won't do it back to back. I'm going to put a little bit of breathing room between the two. You guys heard it here first. My friend, I appreciate you coming on. Hopefully I lived up to all your expectations internationally.
Brian freaking Lubin, international man of mystery. I loved it. Thank you for the opportunity to share my story.
Appreciate it. And with that, that has been Brian and Amit with the Action Academy podcast, signing off.